half of his energy will go to that lady. And if he is son, 10 son and 10 daughters, then 20 times plus 1, oh, what will remain? Oh, how he can do? So, we take sannyas for this, if married even, in fourth age, after vanaprastha. Only for this, that we can give our whole energy, not a single piece to others. Because Krishna does not take any part. He only takes
complete.
Go on.
Here, Krishna Anushilanam. The word Anu means that bhakti is for Krishna or in connection with Krishna. So those who have realization of Krishna, directly they may serve him. But those who have no realization of Krishna, how can they do Krishna Anushilanam? So Anu also means not only directly for Krishna, also in connection with Krishna. So a conditioned soul who has no direct sensory experience of Krishna, his activities can become in connection with Krishna when those activities are under the guidance of Sri Guru and Vaishnav. So here, Anukulyena. Anukulyena means Pratikul Bhav Rohita. The absence of any antagonistic mood towards Krishna. It's very important that Srila Rupa Goswami Pad has included this word anukul. Someone might say that bhakti means the activity that is pleasing to Krishna. But if we define bhakti in this way, then our definition will have two defects. One defect is called avyapti dosh, and the other defect is called ativyapti dosh. Vyapti means to cover. Avyapti means that the definition does not cover everything that is bhakti. In other words, the definition is too narrow to include everything that is really bhakti. And ativyapti dosh means the covering goes too far, the overextension of a definition. For example, when Krishna is fighting, Krishna and Balaram are fighting with Chanura and Mustika. At that time, Chanura and Mustika are beating them with their fists. And Krishna, he enjoys this. He's relishing virarasa. So this activity is giving happiness to Krishna. Therefore, is it bhakti? No, it's not. But if we say bhakti is what gives pleasure to Krishna, then the activities of Chanura and Mustika would be bhakti. And therefore, something that is not bhakti would fall into our definition. So our definition would be guilty of the ativyapti dosh, the fault of overextension of a definition. On the other hand, when Sri Krishna was drinking the breast milk of Mother Yashoda, and she saw that the milk on the stove was boiling over, she thought, I should stop the milk from boiling over because from this milk I can make paneer and so many other preparations for Krishna that I cannot make from my breast milk. So Madhya Yashoda put Krishna down, but he didn't want to be put down. And he was very upset. He bit his lip and stamped his foot. He became red-faced and he wanted to make some mischief to take revenge. So here the activity of Madhya Yashoda did not make Krishna happy. Does that mean that it's not bhakti? No, surely it was bhakti. But if we say that bhakti is that which pleases Krishna, then Madhya Yashoda's activities will fall outside the range of our definition. So our definition will be guilty of the defect of avyapti dosh, the defect of underextension of a definition. Therefore, to give a perfect and exact, accurate, precise definition, Rupa Goswami did not say bhakti is to please Krishna. He said it's the cultivation of all endeavors for the benefit of Krishna. For his ultimate benefit, it is anukulyena. It is in a favorable mood. It is devoid of any antagonistic mood. So in this way, Rupa Goswami defined the swarup lakshanam, the intrinsic characteristic of bhakti. Now, if all these activities are there, all these qualities are there, but the tatastha lakshan is also not present, it cannot be called uttama bhakti. The tatastha lakshan is, first of all, anyabhilashta shunyam. That it should be devoid of, shunya means completely devoid of, anya abhilas, other desires, desires other than that to serve Sri Krishna. And it should be jnana kamadi anavritam. Here, Rupa Goswami, he did not say anya abhilasta shunyam, jnana kamadi sunyam. He did not say completely devoid of karma and jnana. Why? For a sadhak in this world, they cannot be completely free of karma and jnana. We always have to do some activities. One will have to bathe, one will have to breathe, and so on. These are also activities. We cannot be devoid of them. And also, if a person is in society, sometimes they have to set an example. Like Advaita Acharya, he does not have to do any Shraddha ceremony for his forefathers, yet he did it so that many people would come together and engage in Harikatha and Kirtan. So this is a performance of karma, to do Shraddha for the forefathers. But if it is done, but without faith that, oh, if I do this, my bhakti will increase, or if I neglect it, it will also be detrimental to my bhakti. If one understands, it will not have any effect at all. Then with that kind of faith, the performance of some karmas will actually be anavritam. It will not cover bhakti. Now, jnana is of three types. Tat padartha jnana, tvam padartha jnana, and brahma jivaikya jnana. Tat padartha jnana means knowledge of who is God. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the ocean of rasa. He is Sarva Shaktiman. He is the origin of all energies. He is the ocean of all opulence and sweetness. This is Tat Padartha Gyan. And in the beginning stage of our spiritual life, this knowledge is important and helpful. And it will not cover bhakti, this type of knowledge. Then we have Tvam Padartha Gyan. It means knowledge of the jiva. Who am I? I am a very tiny, as we have heard today, insignificant, infinitesimal, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, part and parcel of Sri Krishna, an emanation, manifestation of His Tathasta Shakti. And by Swarup, by constitution, I am Sri Krishna's servant. All this type of knowledge is called Tvam Padartha Gyan. And in the beginning stages of bhakti, this is also helpful and important, and it will not cover bhakti. But the next type of knowledge, that is Brahma Jiva Brahma Aikya Gyan, the idea, the knowledge that the jiva and Parabrahma are one, absolutely one in all respects. This type of jnana completely covers bhakti, and therefore that jnana must be neglected. So if all these the Tathasta Lakshan symptoms are there and the Swarup Lakshan symptoms are there, then that cultivation is called Uttama Bhakti.
Very good. Thank you. Vrindavan Prabhu has served his Gurudev. Oh, Bhagavan Prabhu. He has served his Gurudev, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, in so many ways. He helped that Vrindavan Krishna Balaram temple. Oh, how beautiful. And everywhere he helped him. I want that he should tell something. Two lines even. Yes, I remember.
I remember meeting you in the room in the guest house.
He liked you so much.
We liked you so much.
Yes, I also. Because you have served your Gurudev. I want that again you should serve.
I'm here.
Go on.
I wanted to speak. I haven't studied Sanskrit in a while, like a lot of you, but I wanted to speak something practical. And I think about Maharaj a lot because I know so many people have been inspired. Now, you can try to understand the very technical details of what composes coming to a high level of bhakti. And so, Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they've written very, what you might call, quantum theory of bhakti, where you can go down to the microcosmic level of how the electrons move around the lotus feet. And that is good for keeping the mind interested. There's a point, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when someone becomes so materially attracted. First there's attraction, then there's so many different levels, and ultimately it leads to what you would consider becoming absorbed in material life. Whatever it is that attracts you to material life, because it's the reflection of spirituality, there is something that attracts you to spiritual life. It may be, for the most part, for someone, a temple. It may be another devotee who comes and makes you aware, opens a window. Whatever it is, like Prabhupada used to say, no one can tell you after you taste an orange what an orange tastes like. So we have to see that one of the abilities to love, and that is an ability, it's not just a theory. There's a lot of theory that can be spoken, which ultimately has to be translated, whether in Sanskrit, English, whatever language, into an ability for someone to actually experience the love that you have in you and inspire the love. Let's take Maharaj for an example. He inspires love. So what does that mean? That means that on a certain foundation level, as a devotee, you become kind to each other. You become respectful to each other. You cannot be preaching way up here and be foreboding down here. People used to quote all kinds of high things and be mean to their wives or be mean to their children or consider those who were not devotees to be karmis, to be like that. The high-minded spiritual master teaches you to have a vision, not just an intellectual vision, but an actual vision, that when you look, you see everyone is from one source. Not that the Muslim source is different than the Hindu source, is different than a Jewish source. That is the advantage of Vaishnavism. It's supposed to cut beyond religion. If Vaishnavism, because it's misunderstood, turns into a religion, and you make sectarian, this is Narayan Maharaj's group, this is Prabhupada's group. What makes that different than the Muslims and the Christians? Or the Jews and the Christians? It doesn't. There has to be a piercing ability to love that goes through all that. And that's what you have the fortune of observing, not just Maharaj's intellect, but you have the opportunity to observe his heart, just like we had the opportunity to observe Prabhupada's heart. Now that's supposed to ignite something. It's not supposed to ignite imitation. I remember when we were all growing up, people used to like to imitate how Prabhupada spoke, even if you came from Atlanta. Try to sound like Prabhupada, or you try to walk like Prabhupada, or you try to like Prabhupada. Whatever. The idea is to try to see like he sees. Try to see how he sees. And that's when you have a guru. You can say, I have a guru, but that doesn't mean anything. You can say, I have a spiritual name. That doesn't mean, that means something. Okay, it means something. But what really means is that you can look at an individual who may be opposed to you and try to understand you have the same father and mother. You have the same God, you have the same father, you have the same mother. You have to bring it down to something practical. And all of this is not just for an intellectual exercise. that so much can be quoted here and there. It must be practical, not just even in building temples, not just even in making books, but building your heart. That's what counts. This is the yoga of bhakti. It's the yoga of the heart. It's not just the yoga of the intellect. It's not just the yoga of the mind. It's not just the yoga of architecture and building temples. It's not just any of that. It's how this has been melted and transformed into something beautiful. So even if someone doesn't see you as beautiful, even if someone sees you as crazy, because don't they always see spiritual people as crazy? The materialists see spiritual people as crazy, and the religionists see spiritual people as crazy. Otherwise, why is there conflict between two groups such as Prabhupada started and as Maharaj is here? Why? Because religion is a far thing from spirituality. So in building all these temples and in having all these gatherings, this is not about just saying Maharaj is great, he's great, he's so pure. It's about you understanding, because he has achieved this. What he has achieved is also in you. Otherwise, what is the ability of, what is the meaning of part and parcel? We are all part and parcel. Someone has risen to shine. That means that you don't always have to walk around saying, I am the worm in the stool, I am the worm in the stool, I am the worm in the stool. No, you can also shine as he shines. Out of respect, you never say, I can shine as big or whatever. That may be, as Prabhupada said, the father always likes when the son outshines him. But the son or daughter never thinks that way. But that may be. So these gatherings here, as Prabhupada started and as many people continue, these gatherings are about transformation. And that's the only thing they're about. And unless there is transformation, then what was gleaned from all of this? That you can learn a new Sanskrit word, or you can learn a new Sanskrit verse, or you can sound intellectual? No. It's transformation. And that transformation, what this world needs, as Prabhupada's friend, the Beatle, said, what you need is love. And that's what he's teaching. So we thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
What he told, I could not all learn. In brief,
Bhagavan Prabhu was very wonderfully presenting that all of us are coming together here to understand the need to transform our heart, that we can open up and respect each other as being coming from the same source. We're all part and parcel children of God. And the most wonderful treasure that we have in our midst is the example of our beloved Gurudev. Yes, Srila Prabhupada came. He emanates that love and affection. That is why we all feel so inspired. So it is our responsibility to become reflections, to become similar in mood as our Gurudev, as Srila Prabhupada, and embrace all living entities as one family, and enlighten each other with love and affection towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and respecting all, cooperate. Good. This was the essence.
Very good, of this very message. Good. Thank you.
Now you should ready for, don't delay.
Tomorrow morning will be yagya for all the initiates, the fire sacrifice. So we're going to do that at Nanda Gopal's place, and we're going to start early because it's very hot, 8 o'clock. male, female, Harinam Diksha,
Gauranga bolite hobe.
And those who, the men who took second initiation have to shave their heads.
Gauranga bolite hobe.